It's 5:06 and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A quick reminder that we are in our fall membership drive. You can support Wisconsin Public Radio with a pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Now, is ethical parenting possible? Seems like a simple question, and of course, yes, we'd like to think it is.
But while we may think we're being ethical parents, there are oftentimes things we do to give our own kids a leg up in the world that may involve gaming the system.
Could be something easy, simple, like inviting the team coach over for dinner, or more obvious manipulation, donating money to the kids' school for future favors, maybe.
And according to our next guest, kids notice when their parents use manipulation to give them a boost in life, and the result may be a less ethical younger generation.
Here with us to discuss ethical parenting is contributing editor at New York Magazine, Lisa Miller. Her recent article on the topic appeared in this week's issue of New York Magazine. Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Really happy to be here. Thanks.
Well, I love this line. You say, parenthood, like war, is a state in which it's impossible to be moral. How come?
Right. Well, I think that, you know, we're, as parents, we're always walking this line between what's good for our kids and wanting to be, you know, good citizens and pay attention to other people and the good of the community and the good of the world. But when our kids need something, their needs come first. And so we treat everything else as second, and that doesn't make us always so ethical.
Well, and it seems really well-meaning, of course. It's a natural thing. You want to do well for your kids. But one of the big arguments in your piece is that, if we cut those corners, maybe kids are picking up on that.
Right. I mean, all of the ethicists I talked to for the story, and I talked to a lot, the first thing they said sounds sort of obvious, but it's really important, which is that kids learn by watching you more than what you say. So although you may say, in our neighborhood, we hear a lot of, you get what you get, but you don't get upset. Like, that's what people say to their kids. You get what you get, and you don't get upset. So that's life. But on the other hand, they watch you, you know, calling your friend who's on the board and yelling at people who don't treat your kid the way you want them to, and calling the teacher and complaining about a grade, and calling the principal and complaining about a grade, and, you know, wrangling behind the scenes to get your kid an internship. And they learn that complaining and bullying and wrangling and possibly cheating are the ways to get the things you want. And that's not what we want to be teaching our kids, I don't think.
But is there kind of an arms race where
Definitely.
If all the other parents are doing this and I'm not, I'm punished for being the good guy?
It's really tricky, right? Because all the other parents are doing it. And not just in New York and L.A. and Chicago, but really all over the country, I think, to greater and lesser degrees and in different kinds of environments. And yeah, that's the problem. I mean, Barry Schwartz, a psychologist at Swarthmore, said to me, you know, it's the opposite of the free rider problem. The free rider problem is, if everybody recycles and you don't recycle, you still benefit from recycling. But if everybody is, you know, gaming the system to get a leg up on behalf of your kids and you don't do it, then you're actually disadvantaging your kid. That's real. That's not a perception thing or a, you know, if I could just be brave, I would be doing the right thing. It's real. And so you have to live in an environment where everybody's looking out for their own kids first and figure out how to navigate.
Well, we hear the phrase, it's not as popular nowadays, but the whole helicopter parent phenomenon, where parents just don't let kids do the things for themselves. Are the ethical shortcuts you're talking about here just another example of that?
I think it's slightly different. But, you know, one psychologist I talked to compared this kind of thing to fixers, the Hollywood people or the mafia people who sort of make sure that the outcome that you want is what happens, even if they get it by illicit means. And this is like that. This is like hanging around in the background and talking to the school administration and talking to the coach and hiring the tutor. It's a kind of scaffolding that gives the kids the impression that they can't actually do it.
I'm just
themselves.
I'm laughing along with a picture of my fellow soccer parents as like mafia thugs going out and leaning on teach to give my kid the better grade or the better recommendation.
You know, every time I talk about this story on the radio or on TV, somebody, a producer or a photographer or somebody in the background, pulls me aside and says, you know, my friend, sister, aunt is a teacher in a private school or is a teacher in a public school and something, you know, the principal said that the, last night somebody told me this story. The principal said that if the kids were caught drinking at prom, they would all be denied graduation. The kids were caught drinking at prom, and the parents banded together and hired a lawyer so that the kids would graduate. And so what the kids learn is, if you get caught doing something bad, you hire a lawyer, and then you get out of it. It does seem to be showing kids that if you know how to work the system, you can get ahead.
Do kids push back on this? Do they say, hey, let me fight my own battles?
There is a group of kids who are, and these are sort of the heroes of my story. I know a kid who went to a very fancy New York City private high school. And in the spring of his junior year, when everybody was going crazy, you know, doing their SAT prep and, you know, making lists of schools and hiring private college counselors, he basically went on strike. He said, I refuse to do this. This is corrupt. Everybody in my zip code is taking SAT prep. It's ridiculous. It inflates the scores. It's meaningless. I'm not doing it. And his parents, who are lovely people, tried to be supportive and privately were so anxious that he was throwing his life away. And in the end, what they feared would happen actually happened, which is that he didn't get into college at all. And he hung around at home, and he drove them a little bit crazy for a year. And then but he learned that he really did want to go to college. And he is now happily studying classics and composing electronic music at a school that's not in the U.S. News Top 50. And he's proud of himself, and his parents are proud of him. And you have to think that that story is a success story. And the kid led the charge, not the parents.
We're talking to Lisa Miller from New York Magazine. She wrote a piece about ethical parenting. We want to hear from you. Do you see examples like this, maybe more Wisconsin-type examples, parents just doing too much for their kid and maybe bending some rules, ethical bad examples for their kids while they're trying to get their kids ahead? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We'll pick up this conversation in a few minutes.
This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard here with Gene Purcell, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Listeners provide the single largest piece of our budget. That's what it comes down to. That's why we have pledge drives, and that's why your gift is so important. And to encourage that gift today, to give you just a little nudge, your pledge of any amount automatically enters you in a drawing for an iPad. So make your gift of any amount right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And here's what happened last hour. We had 36 listeners call or write in with their pledges, and thanks to all of you for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've got a brand new goal of 35 pledges before 6 o'clock. We've already got a couple in the door, so just 33 to go before 6 o'clock right now. And these goals are set up to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money that we need to pay for the programs that you rely on. So help us meet that goal with your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You enjoy programs like this one during the week, and maybe you also enjoy Zorba Pastor on your health, Car Talk, maybe old-time radio drama on the weekend. We've got them covered every day of the week, and weekends are extra fun, too.
They are extra fun, and your pledge right now ensures that that fun continues. It supports all of the programs you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, and it is easy to donate. It takes just a few minutes to do. Make your pledge online at WPR.org or give us a call at 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with just a few minutes of your time. That's really all that it takes. You just give us your name, your contact information. You decide how much you'd like to give and how you'd like to pay. And then whether you call or you pledge online, we keep your personal information safe, and we never share it with any other organizations.
And think about the impact of those few minutes you spend making a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. It is your gift that supports the stories and supports all of the programs here that keep you connected with Wisconsin and with the world. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is your daily companion. We are on the air 24 hours a day, whether you're home, you're in the car, at the office, whether you're concentrating or you're using WPR to kick back and relax.
And as you know, there are good companions and there are bad companions. WPR is a good companion. You count on us for accurate news, great music, intelligent conversation. You want to be in the car with us. We, in turn, count on you to support what you hear, because that is how public radio works. So give now, WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I'm Sam from Madison, and my husband and I are sustainers of WPR. Wisconsin Public Radio is really my main source for global news and community news. My husband and I like being sustainers because I don't have to think about the contribution that I write out. It's automatic. And when I hear appeals on the radio, I already feel good. Like, yes, I made my donation and I'm making it monthly, so I don't have to think about it. I think it's critical that my husband and I support Wisconsin Public Radio and the programming that they broadcast. We really are lucky to live in this community, and I only want to make it stronger. So I hope you'll join me in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio as a sustaining member.
You can join and become a sustaining member just like that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Veronica Rickard. I'm here with Gene Purcell, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio during this fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $10 a month, maybe $20 a month. Well, the great thing is you get to choose what feels right to you, and then you make your pledge at that amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And the beauty of making a voluntary donation is that you get to decide how much to give. You decide what amount works for you, what fits in your budget, what amount will make a difference to Wisconsin Public Radio. I like what Lucy from Milwaukee says. She says, WPR improves my quality of life on a daily basis. What is that worth to you? But do remember that how much you give isn't as important as the fact that you do give.
Well, since making a donation is your choice, and because WPR is something that you value, you'll probably find we have a sneaking suspicion that donating feels good. So find out right now for yourself. Don't take our word for it. You can find out at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Many new members give $5 a month, but other people decide to give more generously because that's what feels right. And they know maybe that they listen a lot. Maybe it's not in your house all the time and you'd like to give a little more generously.
Absolutely. And another thing, if you've given to Wisconsin Public Radio before, you may have gotten something in the mail asking you to renew. Well, time flies and papers pile up on desks, and maybe it's been longer than you realize since you last gave to Wisconsin Public Radio. We're asking you right now to keep your membership active.
Think of your support to Wisconsin Public Radio like you think of other services that you rely on, like the telephone or the internet. Renew your support of Wisconsin Public Radio right now with an ongoing monthly gift. We'll make it easy for you and easy for us. Everybody wins at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret, here with Veronica Rickard, and we pick up our conversation now with Lisa Miller. She's contributing editor at New York Magazine. We're talking about the ethics of parenting, or the lack of same in some cases. The story so far, she found that a lot of parents are willing to cut serious ethical corners when it comes to their kids' success in school, in sports, you name it. And it's a bad lesson that kids really often do pick up on. Lisa, let's talk about some more examples. Just before the break there, you mentioned getting SAT prep. Is that, it seems like something a lot of people might do if they're worried about getting kids into college. Is that something we would see as going too far?
Well, I think, you know, it's cultural, right? In certain groups of people, SAT prep is normal. It inflates scores. It makes scores higher than people who don't get SAT prep. So, you know, on the face of it, it's an uneven playing field, right? And some of the game to increase the prep and, you know, get better and better scores has led some schools to say, these are now meaningless. These tests are now meaningless. In New York City, an association of private elementary schools has decided not to use these private school tests as a measure for acceptance because the prep is so rampant that it makes the score worthless. So, you know, yes and no. It's not unethical to get your kid prep for a test that's important, but to participate in this sort of ramping up of the arms race may be unethical. And it's something that parents need to think about. And I talked to this SAT tutor who charges $22,000 per kid per year for prep.
Wow.
Right?
How do I get into that gig?
In the elite, you know, in sort of for kids who go to the elite Manhattan schools. And he said something so interesting to me, which was that every time he meets a new family, the mom pulls him aside and says, "We're not really like this.
Huh.
We're not the kinds of people who blah, 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 pay tens of thousands of dollars on SAT prep. We come from Wisconsin. We come from Minnesota. We grew up in Sacramento. We grew up in the suburbs. We aren't these people," except they are. And so it's an acknowledgement from them that there's something wrong about this. It's not with their values. It doesn't go with their values. And yet they feel that they have to do it because everybody else is doing it. And it's very hard, back to the Barry Schwartz free rider problem, it's very hard to be the one parent who says, "Yeah, this game isn't for me. I'm not doing it." Not in the culture where everybody's doing it.
So why do we do this? Why we wouldn't maybe cut that ethical corner for our own benefit, and we're aware maybe that we're blurring the lines for our kids. So how do we reconcile that?
I think, you know, first and foremost, we're parents, and we believe that it's our job to protect our children and look out for their safety and their prosperity and their health and their future, and we're right about that. I mean, that's what parents do, and they do it across, you know, nationalities and socioeconomic strata, and that's what we do. But I also think that there's a current anxiety among parents, among Americans, about war and economic collapse and warming and all kinds of things. And we feel like we have to give our kids the tools they need to succeed, and we don't know what those tools are. And so there's a kind of desperation on the part of parents that makes them more venal, more mean, more competitive, more aggressive. And in the story, I compare them to I tell the story of chimpanzees. Chimpanzees and bonobos. Chimpanzees are really mean creatures. They're hierarchical. They kill each other's children. Bonobos, which are closely genetically related, are the loveliest people, loveliest creatures on earth. And they take care of each other's children, and they have sex all the time, and they're very communitarian. And the difference is that resources are scarce among chimpanzees. They're seasonal. There's competition for food. And among bonobos, resources are plentiful. So if you put humans in a situation of scarcity or even perceived scarcity, they start to act like chimpanzees and not like bonobos. And, you know, I think that that's what's happening now. Whether the scarcity is real or imagined, perceived, I think is an open question, but that's how parents feel.
Well, I want to touch on an irony, though, that you sort of alluded to earlier. You just mentioned parents who are trying to get the tools for their kids to succeed, not always sure what they are. Maybe it's the fanciest education possible, but maybe it's self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and a good ethical compass. And in going for the one, we may be sacrificing the others.
I think that's absolutely true. And in fact, you know, psychological research shows that when you start to do too much for your kids, they start to believe that they can't do it themselves. You know, one psychologist I talked to said, you know, you create crippled kids or entitled kids or both. I thought, wow, that's really bad, being crippled and entitled. But I think that is the danger, right? I mean, lots and lots of books have been written in the last 2 or 3 years about how children need to fail, that the way that they become resilient and independent and full of grit, which is what we all want our kids to be, is to let them fail. And so we have to be brave enough somehow to step back and not make the call to the, you know, our friend on the board or to the teacher, to the principal or to the coach, and not harangue the theater director for the better part, and not give the expensive Christmas present, and it's very difficult in the culture that we live in.
Well, yeah, there's like this, as a parent, like a constant civil war in my brain between the side that wants to go out and help my babies do everything and not get hurt, and the part that says basically what you just said, they need to develop some grit and I need to sit on my hands and shut up for a while. As a parent, how do you resolve that, whether we're talking about day-to-day stuff or these ethical issues?
You know, I so refuse to give parenting advice.
No, but what do you do?
I think it's really, really hard to be a parent, and there's no right way. And, you know, I think what I tried to do in the piece, and what I hope the piece succeeds in doing, is describing that civil war in all of our brains. And I think none of us is immune to that civil war. And in certain, you know, hot houses like New York City, the civil war is, you know, very acute and bloody, and in other places maybe not so much, but we all deal with it every single day. Because, you know, as Stephen Osma says in his book Against Fairness, if you're given this ethical problem, if presented with this ethical problem where you push a button and 10 children die somewhere far away, but your children live, well, who wouldn't push the button, right? Who wouldn't protect their child and, you know, put all of the other children in the world second? It's a horrible truth, but there it is.
All right. That's a good place to leave it. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Really happy to be here. Thanks.
That was Lisa Miller, contributing editor at New York Magazine. Just a quick update on our pledge drive. We've had 7 pledges so far this hour. 7 pledges, looking for 28 more by 6 o'clock. You can join in at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's 888-202-2552. And we always welcome your pledges online at WPR.org. Coming up, our guest says we are in a golden age of TV theme songs, songs that keep you listening and really sort of shape the way you feel about watching your favorite program. We'll hear some of the greatest hits of TV theme songs, past and present. You're listening to Central Time right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. I'm Rob Ferret. Gene Purcell is sitting to my right, and we are here to ask for your support of the programs that you enjoy, that you count on. Your support makes high-quality, commercial-free programs on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. And check it out. If you pledge today, you get entered in a drawing for your very own iPad. So it's a great time to support the programs you value, that you love, with a gift at WPR.org. Or here's the number you can call. Ready? 888-202-2552.
We're just a little way, about halfway through the hour right now. We're looking for 25 more pledges in about the next 25 minutes. Just a pledge a minute will get us to our goal before 6 o'clock. And it's your pledge right now that will help us not just make that goal, but help us pay for the programs that you count on here in Wisconsin Public Radio all year long. Thanks, by the way, if you've already given. But if you haven't, or if you've never given to Wisconsin Public Radio, we're asking you to make a pledge right now. WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
All right, we got this new show, right? It's Central Time.
Yep.
We've been at it for about 3 months now. It's been a blast. It's been a lot of work, but it's been a lot of fun. It's been exciting. It's been an adventure. I'm having a great time. But you hear everything here, right? The political stuff, what was going on in Syria, the government shutdown, the debt ceiling. We did that. The awesomest dinosaurs in the world. Yep.
Done
college
that.
Football. Pro
Check.
Football, the upside
Check.
And the downside with the concussions. Advice on fixing your computers. everything, man. It's a fun show. We cover a lot of ground, and I hope you appreciate it enough to give some financial support to Central Time, to the Ideas Network, to Wisconsin Public Radio. Go to your computer at WPR.org and make that pledge, or call 888-202-2552.
And so why does all the great things happening in Central Time matter? Well, it matters because it is you who makes it possible. It is your financial support that makes Central Time happen, that makes everything happen here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support, we've said this before and we'll say it again, it is the single biggest piece of our funding here at Wisconsin Public Radio. So let me just repeat that. Listener support, yeah, that's you listening out there right now, is the single biggest piece of our funding at Wisconsin Public Radio. That means you are an important part of this. Make your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
If you've never pledged before, here's a little something to maybe give you that extra nudge. You'll be entered into a drawing for an iPad with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Gene, hit us with the legal stuff.
This is the legal stuff, and if we're on commercial radio, I talk really super fast like this, and I just read right, but I'm not.
Right.
I'm on public radio, right, so I'm going to be cool about this. You don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard in with your name, your address, your email, and your telephone number. Send it to WPR iPad Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Now, you can enter by sending a postcard, as I just described, or by making a pledge right now. That's the preferred method. WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I like the different views. I like most of the guests that you have on there. You know, I don't even consider commercial stations at all. It's either the public station or nothing. I can't imagine being without it.
All right. Well, those are some good reasons to make a gift to Wisconsin Public Radio. Go to WPR.org. WPR.org. Check out that fancy new website. Some people have been laboring behind the scenes. It's awesome. Check it out. And while you're there, make a pledge. You can also call 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support during this fall membership drive.
You know, we hear from a lot of first-time pledgers. In fact, we've heard from six people this hour who have made their first pledge ever to Wisconsin Public Radio, and they tell us that they're giving because they might have gotten their first job out of college, and now they've been listening for a long time. Now they can afford to give. Or people who turned 30 and realized, I'm growing up now, and it's time to give to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. If it's your first ever, welcome aboard. We really appreciate it. Join Lucy from Milwaukee, who pledged. She says, WPR improves my quality of life on a daily basis. I bet we improve your quality of life on a daily basis. Put a dollar amount on it, maybe $5 a month, and make that pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thanks.
This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert here with Rob Ferret. We've all got our favorites, from the Flintstones to the Jeffersons, from I Love Lucy to the Simpsons. Theme songs can change the way we think and feel about a show.
And while all those are memorable, our next guest says it's more important now than ever that a TV show's theme song is catchy.
Joining us now is Steve Knopper, freelance writer for The Wall Street Journal and a contributing editor for Rolling Stone. His piece, The Golden Age of TV Theme Songs, is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Steve, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much for having me.
So why is it now more important than ever that a theme song have legs, that it be catchy?
Well, the thesis that I have in my story is, the answer to that question is, we're in the binge-watching era. I mean, people don't just watch a show once a week. They watch a show 15, 20 times in a weekend sometimes, using, you know, their iPad or Netflix or whatever means they have. And so when you do that over and over and over again, you don't want the theme song to annoy you. You don't want it to be bad. You don't want it to be boring or just an earworm. And so therefore, because of this repetition, you're listening to these theme songs sometimes more than you might listen to a hit on top 40 radio. So these songs have to be built in such a way to kind of withstand repetition. And so therefore, there's a lot of different approaches to them, and it's a little bit different than the way we used to understand the way sea music was put together.
Well, let's check out one of the ways we used to do it. This is kind of a favorite. It's Gilligan's Island.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic port aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailor.
All right, well, they took that three-hour tour. They don't do songs like this anymore that tell the whole darn lead-in story, do they?
No, I mean, that was the thing, is that television in the era of Gilligan's Island was a relatively new thing. And so every week when somebody tuned in, they had to sort of explain the show in the opening theme song. I mean, the Addams Family did it. Star Trek had that voiceover with the music that did it. I mean, that lasted for a long time. But now, I mean, things have become so minimalist, and there's a lot of different ways that shows do it, but we're at the point where something like Lost or Breaking Bad just has, like, a six-second snippet, just a little tiny piece of distinctive music that kind of goes with the show. And, you know, certainly you're not hearing the whole story of Walter White when you're listening to Breaking Bad.
No, but somebody should do that for YouTube.
3-hour meth lab.
That's right.
Well, some shows like Parenthood, they use a classic song, like Dylan's Forever Young. Is that another route to go? You just use something that's tried and true?
Yeah, I mean, I interviewed the executive producer of Parenthood. That was sort of the key example of my story. His name is Jason Katims. And he said that, I mean, Parenthood was put together in 2010, so not quite in the golden age of binge watching as we are now. And they didn't come up with that song, Forever Young by Bob Dylan, for that purpose. They just wanted something kind of big and broad that would hit on all the different themes of Parenthood, which are many. But when we were speaking by phone, he really kind of agreed with the thesis that when people are watching these shows over and over and over again, you want it to have the song, you want it to have layers of meaning, and you want to be sort of stripping away at the onion of what this song means mentally while you're watching these interesting images that are linked with the show that go by. And I would submit that other shows do that really well, too, like Orange is the New Black with that new Regina Spektor song, You've Got Time, does a very effective job of that. And the Little Boxes song on Weeds, which has a number of different cover versions and had a different one every week, I also think was a great example of that.
Right. They really played with that. I watched all of Weeds and gave you an incentive to keep watching the opening credits to see who was doing it and how.
Right, exactly. You want to not, ideally, I think if you have a show and you want it to be binge watched, so to speak, you don't want to have people who are watching it fast forward through the theme every week, because eventually, or you know, go to the kitchen and get some food. Eventually, you know, they'll get annoyed with that and they won't want to watch it anymore. So it's pretty important, and not only that, but themes have to be part of the branding of a show. You know, it's a show when it gets created now. You know, it has to have a good theme or else it might not get the green light. I mean, themes are pretty important.
Do you think that people are exploring themes now the way that credits have kind of evolved? People have little outtakes in the credits and it keeps people watching and giggling till the end. And now that the theme and the opening of the show is just as important.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. When you talk about the credits, you mean the end credits, right?
Right, the end credits when you roll. And you see the little outtakes, and even, you know, Disney and Pixar doing funny things at the end, whereas it just used to be kind of a roll of endless names.
Yeah, that's true. Although on TV, it seems like we've come back to that a little bit. I mean, when you think about The Sopranos and The Wire and all the great binge-watching shows, it fades to black, and you hear that music, and Mad Men does this too, and you just watch the credits as the music goes by, and you wait for the next week episode. So, I don't know, my story wasn't about that, but now that I think about it, it seems like perhaps we're regressing in that direction in a way, in certain aspects.
Another favorite here at Central Time, Game of Thrones, a catchy theme song, and a very vivid, cool opening graphic. Are you seeing more integration of song and visual in opening titles?
Absolutely, and that's something that Jason Katims and other people that I interviewed mentioned. And Game of Thrones is a great example of that, because it's got this really distinctive, catchy, and deep kind of instrumental theme, something that you can kind of listen to over and over again and not have it feel like this is this annoying earworm. It's got some heft to it. But in addition, you're actually literally watching a map unfold of all the complicated different geography of Game of Thrones and who lives where and where all the kingdoms are. And so every time you watch it each week, you kind of go, oh, okay, that's where that person is. And it's sort of like you're putting all the clues together. So, yeah, and Orange is the New Black is, again, another great example of that, because the music's playing. It's kind of a mysterious type of song with a lot of nuance to it. And then you've got these images, close-up face mugshot images of all these female prisoners kind of flashing by in video. So I think the integration of the music and the visual in that part of the show is very important.
Now, we've been talking about the greatest hits of TV theme songs, but are there some that you just despise and never want to hear again for the rest of your life?
Well, you know, I may make enemies by saying this, but I love the show Friends, but I could live the rest of my life without hearing that song.
All right, they won't be there for you. Let's hit some other, let's have some fun and hit some of the other favorites from history. I'll throw out Sanford and Sons, a Quincy Jones awesome theme song.
Yeah.
And I'll get a little more obscure from Japan, Cowboy Bebop, the song Tank. It's an awesome horn thing. Maybe I'll put it up on the Central Time Facebook page again. But it's that is one opening sequence that I actually binge watched the show and watched the credits every time. And sometimes when I was done binge watching, I went back and watched them again. Do you have any like that?
I mean, I have favorites, and mine are. I think you're just being obscure to be cool.
No, it's not. I'm not that cool.
He really is.
I promise.
Just kidding. But you got to go with a classic. I mean, my all time favorite theme song is the Hawaii Five-0 song.
Oh yeah.
That is just that in addition to being that song, I think pulls off the rare feat of not only being something that completely evokes memories of the show, but also just is a standalone surf rock classic. So by the Ventures. So that one's my favorite. And my obscure one, or somewhat obscure one, is more recent. It's We Used to Be Friends by the Dandy Warhols, which was the Veronica Mars.
Oh yeah,
So that whole era of television. Buffy the Vampire Slayer had a great mm-hmm. theme, and Angel had a good theme. It was kind of like this sort of rockin' theme thing. I like that whole era.
Veronica?
I have to clash with you about Friends, because I think that you're right. Like, it's not a great theme song, but I think because you love the show, you get this sort of tingle of anticipation of something good that's going to come. You're kind of, like Pavlov's dog, you're conditioned to like the song because you like the show. Does that ever happen to you?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I guess now that you make that point, it's a pretty good point. I mean, when I hear that song, all of a sudden I think of, young, good-looking actors dancing around in a pond.
And who doesn't like that?
So, yeah, right, exactly. So, but yeah, there are all kinds of. I mean, yeah, you have these very visceral sort of. I hear this music, and all of a sudden, I remember not only the characters and the plots and the stories, but particular lines from the show. I mean, how often does that happen with The Simpsons? You automatically listen to Danny Elfman's theme, and then you start doing Homer Simpson in your mind.
All right. Well, Steve, it's been fun. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course, it was fun. Thank you.
We've been talking to Steve Knopper, freelance writer for The Wall Street Journal and a contributing editor for Rolling Stone. His piece, The Golden Age of TV Theme Songs, is linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
And when you go there, you can share your all-time favorite TV show theme song. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. I'm here with Veronica Rickert and Gene Purcell is here too. It's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. We are trying to get this first day of the drive off to a great start. Just about 7 minutes left in our first ever pledge day here on Central Time. We want to do great and we need your help. Your gift is important to Wisconsin Public Radio. Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you help pay for the programs that you depend upon here at Wisconsin Public Radio. We're getting close to the top of the hour right now. We've got about 16 pledges to go before 6 o'clock. So 16 pledges in 6 or 7 minutes or so. We need to make that goal. You need to make your donation right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can take a few minutes out of just the beginning part of your Friday night and do something that's pretty fun that will make a big difference and make many more hours like this one possible on Wisconsin Public Radio. What you do is you choose a gift that works for you, an amount that works in your budget, and then you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you're thinking, I can't afford to pledge that much. The amount of money I pledge isn't going to make that much of a difference. wrong, because there's you, and then there's your neighbor, and then there's your buddy, and all the other people listening. The little amounts, however much you could afford, it really does add up. That's how this thing works. So maybe a pledge of $5 a month. Maybe you're making your first pledge, $5 a month, for all the great listening you get here on the Ideas Network. It really does matter. It helps keep these shows going. Make that pledge at any amount now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
But maybe you are interested in playing a larger role in helping to support Wisconsin Public Radio. If you're one of those people, why not think about the 9XM Leadership Circle? Now, this is a group of listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support WPR programs.
Leadership Circle members value the compelling public radio programming that so many people in our communities rely on, and they want to make sure it stays there, that it's safe and it's continuing to thrive tomorrow for anybody who wants to listen. So if you'd like to increase your support to Wisconsin Public Radio, think about joining the 9XM Leadership Circle. You can go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, WPR has been around a long time because we're committed to quality and we're committed to trying new stuff like, you know, I don't know, the show, Central Time. That quality, that innovation, it only happens because of you. Listener donations, they make up the single largest piece of our budget.
And you know what? I've been around for a long time, too, and I've really seen the change yeah. in listener donations and how important that is becoming here at Wisconsin Public Radio. I can't emphasize it enough. It is your contribution that makes this and every program you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio possible, and you are part of the quality that you hear every single day. It all happens because people like you make that donation, because you make a donation at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We've only got about 5 minutes left on the clock. I don't want to scare
Let's go.
If you're waiting, it's time to go ahead and make that pledge. And maybe you have been listening to Wisconsin Public Radio for a while without pledging. Maybe you haven't given because you didn't know that we're listener supported. Well, guess what? We are listener supported. And the single largest piece of our budget comes from listeners like you. Maybe you wanted to listen for a while to see if you liked what you heard. Well, what do you think? Is tonight the night?
Yeah, you're still listening all these maybe months, maybe years later. How about that first ever donation? After you've given, you're going to feel great every time you tune in. A gift of $5 a month or whatever amount you choose makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Karen from Madison, Wisconsin. I'm a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio. I've listened to public radio since I was a law school student 33 years ago. Wherever I've moved, I've made sure that one of the first things I did was find my public radio outlet. And I'm one of those people that wants to make sure I pay my own way. I realized that the best thing about being a sustaining member is that you can just totally turn off the guilt button. One of the benefits of having sustaining members is it's a guaranteed steady flow of income to the station that allows the station to make commitments to upgrade technology and better serve the listeners. I enjoy being a sustainer, and I think you will too.
Make your donation in support of the programs that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Veronica Rickard here with Gene Purcell and, of course, Rob Ferret, asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during our fall membership drive. And how about an appeal to new listeners? We're new on the air. You're a new listener. Let's do this together. You can help support us, and we support you by giving you the programming that you're interested in, that you rely on. You can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We just got a couple minutes left to talk here. We've got 14 more pledges now that we're looking for this hour. You can pledge right now. Help us meet this very important goal. Provide the support that keeps Central Time, that keeps the Ideas Network, that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio going. It's easy to do. You just go on at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552.
And when you do make that pledge of support, why not think about becoming a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio? It really is the gift that keeps on giving, because as a sustainer, your membership never expires.
And that's because the monthly deductions from your bank account or charges on your credit or debit card, they automatically renew each year. It's easy for everybody. It's a gift that keeps on giving. You can become a sustainer with a monthly gift in whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Just a couple of minutes left to make your pledge in this hour.
Let's spell it out real easy. You count on the programming we bring you for information, for entertainment, for education. We count on you to help pay for that. You're a huge part of our budget. We need you to support us at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio.